Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Charts at Billboard.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hello, Katie.
Hey, Keith.
How are you?
Still recovering from Vegas, Keith.
Does it feel like you were just there?
It feels like I was just there, even though it was 5 days ago at this point.
We're speaking of the Billboard Music Awards, which were in Las Vegas last
week.
We both went, and we'll be talking a little bit about that later.
We'll sprinkle a few things in.
We'll sprinkle in some Vegas-y nuggets. As always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we'll be chatting about big news about Pink, Taylor Swift, Shawn Mendes, AJR, and Madonna.
Plus, we have an interview with Ashley Tisdale.
Yeah!
The singer and actress is back with her first album in almost a decade, Symptoms. She tells us about how getting back into the studio and making the album was totally organic, and how she really wanted to speak her truth on the personal project. So, stick around for that a little bit later.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss a single flippin' episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts. Okie dokie. First, let us discuss some chart news. On the Billboard 200 chart, Pink captures her third overall and consecutive number one album as Hurts to Be Human debuts atop the list. The set earned 115,000 equivalent album units in the U.S. in the week ending May 2nd, according to Nielsen Music. Of that sum, 95,000 were in album sales. Hurts follows Pink's previous number ones, Beautiful Trauma back in 2017, and The Truth About Love back in 2012. Now, nearly two decades into her Billboard 200 history, Pink continues her hottest streak. The new set is also her eighth total and consecutive top 10, dating back to her first, Misunderstood, in 2002. Actually, 2001, I believe. 2002? 2001. I think it's 2001. Her only album to miss the top 10 was her first album, Can't Take Me Home, which peaked at number 26 in 2000. Pink will actually celebrate her 20th anniversary on Billboard's charts next February, believe it or not. She made her Billboard chart debut on February 5th, 2000, when There You Go debuted on the Dance Club Songs and Rhythmic Songs charts.
And for the kids, she had literal pink hair back then.
When did Misunderstood come out, Katie?
2001.
Okay, I was right.
Yes.
Elsewhere in the new top 10 on the Billboard 200.
I need to go back to Pink for a second.
Okay, sorry. Back to Pink.
I just want to take a moment to marvel at the fact that 20 years into her career is when she's like, you know, hitting her peak. just crazy.
I think what's actually happened is that she was having more, she was doing great for the first 10 years of her career. And she had a lot more sort of like, the only difference really is that her albums are hitting number one and she's continuing to be like an arena filling superstar.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she's not having the same sort of pop single success.
Sure.
So But it was only like maybe like 5 or 6 years ago where she was having huge pop singles still. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Just Give Me a Reason and, you know, all those tracks were at that era.
Yeah.
So it is interesting how, you know, she might even think she's like, yeah, I flew under the radar allegedly. I'm like, no, you were. You've
And then she flew over it in her acrobatic Grammy performance.
And then upside down through it. And then through it and then back over.
Anyway, I just love it. We need to just take a moment to appreciate Pink all the time, every day.
I generally do,
yeah. Too.
Okay, well, now I can move on. Elsewhere in the new top 10 on the Billboard 200, the brother trio AJR score their first top 10 and top 40 album as Neo Theater debuts at number 8. The sibling band and friends of the podcast also log its best week ever. In total units and album sales, as the set begins with 32,000 units earned, of which 22,000 were in album sales. The group previously peaked at number 61 in 2017 with its last album, The Click.
Wow.
Yeah, so yay,
AJR. That also had the slow building single that was
Sober Up.
Yeah.
And then the other one, Burn the House Down, Burn the Something Down.
Yeah, but that single with Rivers Cuomo.
That was the big
it
hit.
Came out in the spring and then didn't become a hit until almost a year later.
Oh yeah, because the album came out in like 2017, yeah. And then the track like had a
became
slow burn.
Big hit in 2018.
And that kept the album going.
Exactly.
And it kind of gave them this whole new life at alternative rock radio.
Yes.
Which was unusual for them because they weren't really an alternative act before that.
Yep.
And now they sort of are.
We're all about strange trajectories on the Pop Shop today.
Weird genres. Well, over on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, Taylor Swift's Me, featuring Brendon Urie, sets the record for the largest jump ever on the list as the song zooms from number 100 to number 2 in its second week on the list. Lil Nas X's Old Town Road, featuring Billy Ray Cyrus, holds firm at number 1 for a 5th week. Now, Me is the 23rd top 10 hit for Swift and the first for Brendon Urie. Swift is now tied with Whitney Houston for the 5th most top 10s among all women in the 60-year-old history of the Hot 100 chart. Katie is raising her hand.
Are we not counting Panic at the Disco songs because Brendon Urie is listed as Brendon Urie, or have Panic at the Disco not had a top 10?
Panic has been the top 10.
I thought so.
I'm counting this as just Urie by himself.
Beautiful. That's even what
though,
I needed to know.
Even though Panic is a weird Brendon Urie project.
Right.
You know.
Okay. That's what I wanted to distinguish.
High Hopes was just in the top 10 recently.
That's what I thought.
Taylor Swift is now tied with Whitney Houston for the 5th most top 10s among all women in the history of the Hot 100. Ahead of them, Janet Jackson with 27, Mariah Carey with 28, Rihanna with 31, and Madonna, who holds the record among all artists, with 38. More on Madonna in just a little bit. Now, Me sold 193,000 downloads in its first week, which is the biggest sales week for any song since Swift's own Look What You Made Me Do started with 353,000 downloads back in 2017. Me also collected 50.7 million streams in the tracking week and also vaults 27 to 13 on the All Format Radio Songs chart. Now, you're probably wondering, wait, Old Town Road is still number one, but those numbers for Taylor Swift sound really big. All right, so for comparison, Old Town Road sold 78,000 downloads. So obviously Taylor clearly beat Old Town Road there. She sold 193,000. But Old Town Road had 114.4 million streams, which is, well, more than double what Me had.
Yeah.
And Old Town Road jumped 12 to 6 on the radio songs chart, while Me went 27 to 13. It's just very hard to compete with the pop culture phenomenon that is Old Town Road.
It had a few weeks lead in as far as momentum goes.
Yeah.
It's just kind of untouchable.
Yeah. So, you know, but still a huge week for Taylor.
Indeed.
Over on the Pop Songs Airplay chart, Swift's Me makes a major move, rising 20 to 10 in its second week on the list. That ups her total of top 10s to 17, tying Katy Perry and Mariah Carey for the 5th most top 10s among all acts. Not just women, all acts. Ahead of them, Justin Timberlake with 18, Pink with 19, Maroon 5 with 20, and Rihanna with 30. And the pop songs chart actually began in October of 1992, in case you're wondering why we don't see some other obvious suspects like Madonna or Janet.
For instance. So Swift, of course, released Me on April 29th, the same day as the song's video. And then she had the global debut TV performance of the song on the Billboard Music Awards on Wednesday of last week, May 1st, where she and Brendan Urie opened the show. What did we think of this performance, Keith?
We were actually there.
Yeah, we were there. We were there. Neither of us was inside. We were watching it from a monitor, so we saw it a lot like you did.
I mean, we were within the venue, but we were just backstage.
Indeed.
Yeah, so we watched it on a monitor just like you did at home.
Yes.
No, I thought it was great.
Me
it was
too.
Like big and epic and fun and bright and colorful, and they flew over the audience, and it was just joyful and fun and happy, just like the video is.
Yes.
It's what you want.
Yes.
I mean, in addition to that, there was a lot of other stuff that happened on the Billboard Music Awards. Perhaps an encounter with Madonna.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we may talk about that in just a little bit.
I feel like every episode of the show, we should just be like, we'll probably get back to Madonna in a second. But this one, we really will get back to Madonna.
Hey, if we're in like a Madonna-era cycle where she's actually in promotion.
I know. You know, it's like me and Justin Timberlake last year.
If there's a reason to talk about her, mm-hmm. then we will.
Yes.
Well, okay, back on the pop songs chart, the highest debut comes from Shawn Mendes, whose new track, If I Can't Have You, bows at number 25. Now, the song, which is not on his current album, which is a self-titled effort, was a surprise release on May 3rd, and is Shawn's eighth hit on the pop songs tally. So what do you think of the song Katie? Apparently, it's inspired by the 1975, according to Mendes himself. He tweeted something on Twitter where a fan was asking him a question about where the inspiration came from, and he said it was the 1975 because he was listening a lot to them when he wrote the song.
It's funny, and I don't think that it sounds like a ripoff of the 1975 at all. Like,
no.
Other than the fact that it's a dancey kind of
rock
rocky
song. Yeah.
Which that's their genre, but I think it's awesome. I think it's upbeat. I think it's catchy. The video is super fun. That came along with it the same day.
Yep.
And then, of course, he performed it for the first time ever on SNL on Saturday. And so we got an immediate world debut performance of the song, too. And it's probably going to be his next hit. And we talked about the fact that, Sean is not a stranger to a standalone single.
Yeah.
Right? Because the last time he did that was
2 years ago. He did it. There's Nothing Holding Me Back.
And that never went on an album. I double-checked. It was not on his self-titled album from last year.
I think he stripped it onto the album as like a bonus track.
The previous album?
The Illuminate album.
Okay, yeah. Because it definitely was not on his 2018 album.
No. I think the track just came out as like this random thing. And then I think they just stripped it on as a bonus track on the deluxe, like the digital versions. But it wasn't like the start of a new era. It was just like, hey, I've got this great song. Why not just put it out?
And we also looked up, he worked with a lot of his frequent collaborators on this, including Teddy Geiger was listed as a producer. And I believe it was Scott Harris was the co-writer.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that was the name.
Yeah, who's, I guess, worked with him a lot on a lot of different songs.
Yes, all those songs you know.
So do we think this means that we might be getting a new Shawn Mendes album?
That's the thing, we don't know, because it might just be another There's Nothing Holding Me Back situation,
right.
And it'll just kind of be the end of this era, and a new album won't be coming for a bit. So
it follows that pattern where There's Nothing Holding Me Back was like sort of an up-tempo kind of jammy track. It was like almost like a dancey track.
That was like a full year after the release of Illuminate.
Right, and then his new album came out, the self-titled album came out, and it started off with In My Blood, which is a contemplative, almost ballady moment, and then Lost in Japan, which originally was sort of a mid-tempo.
I love that song.
But it started, but then it got more, it was like an up-tempo, it was up-tempo-y, but not a big dance hit.
Right.
And then this one, you feel like it's like a summery, like, jammy, like very catchy.
It's going to be great on his current tour. He's currently on tour. It's going to be perfect in an arena. And I'm sure, as we've talked to many artists on this podcast, you play the same songs over and over again, and you're like so pumped to like introduce new music into your set. He's probably jazzed that like he all of a sudden gets to play this new, showstopper song.
Right.
So, in other pop-tacular news, and speaking of tours, big tours, Madonna announced her intimate Madame X theater tour on May 6th. That's right. Madonna is stepping away from an arena or a stadium, and she's going on a tiny little theater tour.
Aye.
If you're one of the lucky few that get in that room, that's going to be a pretty sweet sight. So the trek will kick off on September 12th at New York's 2100 capacity BAM Howard Gilman Opera House. I feel like that's not even like the staff of Billboard that would be able to go to this concert.
That's like the normal like credentialed press at a typical arena show.
It's like a high school class. It will also visit multiple nights at the Chicago Theater in October and the Wiltern here in Los Angeles. Other cities and venues she'll play: Las Vegas, the Coliseum, that's in Caesar's Palace, right?
Yeah.
Boston's, is that Bosch?
I think, is it Bach or Bosch? I think it's Bosch.
Sorry, Boston people.
Center
Wayne Theater. Philadelphia's The Met, and Miami's Fillmore Miami Beach at the Jackie Gleason Theater. In 2020, she announced that she'll visit Lisbon, London, and Paris in addition to all those dates.
And each of these cities, she's almost like having like a mini residency where she's playing like five or seven nights or something.
Exactly. Didn't she kind of tease Keith, the theater aspect of this tour, when you talk to her backstage at the Billboard Music Awards? I'm getting away from the microphone because my levels are probably going way up.
It's like we set this up. Why, yes. Yes, she did, in fact. By the way, I interviewed Madonna at the Billboard Music Awards. I don't know. If you haven't seen the video yet, feel free to go to Billboard's YouTube. I think it's just youtube.com/billboard.
Yeah.
And the video is there. It's not that hard to find. Just look for Madonna. You can see her face.
Hmm.
We talked to her for nearly 10 minutes, and the edited version of the video that you see is about 7.5.
Luxurious. It's a luxurious interview.
Yeah, and don't worry, the stuff that we cut out was actually just sort of like fun side chatter that was not specifically music related. It was her talking about how she can bake a great cake.
It's for Keith's own scrapbook.
Yeah, it's just my personal moments. I mean, she brought me an eye patch. I'll post something to social media if you follow me on social media, and you'll see what I'm talking about soon enough. But it was a great interview. She talked all about the making of the album and reuniting with the producer Mirwais, who she worked with on her American Life album and the music album. He produced a lot of the tracks on the new album, including Medellin, which is the first sort of taste of the new album.
Yes.
Just last Friday, she released another song from the album called I Rise. She has another track coming up soon called Crave featuring Swae Lee. So she is just...
They talked a little bit about that
We talked a little bit about that track as well. But it was great. It was like a really great moment, and she was in good spirits. And I thought we had a great conversation.
I think you did too.
Yeah. And
So did Shep Pettibone.
Oh yeah, Shep Pettibone, Shep co-wrote and co-produced many of Madonna's familiar songs, including Vogue, most of the Erotica album, This Used to Be My Playground, Justify My Love. Nope, not Justify My Love. Rescue Me. Justify was Lenny Kravitz. Apologize there, Lenny.
Well, so speaking of Rescue Me.
Rescue Me. And the reason why Shep talked about this on his Facebook was because at the end of the interview, where we talked about the tour a little bit, I asked her if there's a tour coming, and she said, we're in production meetings, so yes, there's probably a tour coming. And I asked if I could make a request, and she was like, for a song. And I suggested that, well, she's had 38 top 10 Hot 100 hits, which I mentioned earlier in the podcast, but she's not performed three of those songs live yet. I'll Remember, Rescue Me, and This Used to Be My Playground. And she kind of demurred on two of them, Playground and I'll Remember, because they're kind of slow ballad songs. And she doesn't really do a lot of ballads in concert. But I said, well, Rescue Me is pretty punchy, which it is. It's a dance track. And she said, you know what? It is dope. She said, Rescue Me is pretty dope. And she said that she'll consider the track.
Oh.
So Shep, who co-wrote and co-produced the track with her, it was one of the two new songs that were on her greatest hits album, The Immaculate Collection, back in 1990. It and Justify My Love were the two new songs on that album. He posted on Facebook saying, well, do you remember Rescue Me? Evidently Madonna does. So if you hear it on the tour, you know, it's because of basically Keith is sort of paraphrasing there. So I hope to see the song on tour. That would be really amazing. But yeah, it was a great interview. Go watch it.
That's and, awesome. You know, some real bucket list stuff right there, Keith.
Yeah, it was totally great. Well, time to move on.
I mean, I guess. I'd rather you never moved on, but well, go ahead.
Did you have questions? You were there, Katie. You were behind the curtain.
I was literally eavesdropping on the entire
interview. She was literally behind a curtain that was like, enclosing us.
But there were some elements of it I couldn't, like, figure out exactly. Like, I wasn't sure. I didn't know if Keith was on camera in the interview. He was not.
No.
But Madonna did give him an eye patch, as you'll see in the video, a Madame X eye patch. And so I was like, wait, is he on camera? And what? Madonna's bringing Keith gifts? And I was just kind of freaking out back there. So,
yeah.
On your behalf.
She did bring a patch. I mean, initially I was supposed to be on camera, but the way we had it sort of set up, it just wasn't going to work out, yeah, right? So I was off camera, but we still had a great conversation.
Oh,
but,
my God. Yeah. It was a super fun, casual, like, light conversation, which is not always the case with a superstar of that, you know, gravitas. So the fact that you had banter with Madonna, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So go Madonna. Okay. Now it's time for our interview with Ashley Tisdale. The singer and actress dropped by The Office recently to chat about her brand new album, Symptoms, which is her first in, believe it or not, nearly a decade. She tells us about how getting back into the studio and making the album was totally organic, and how she really wanted to speak her truth on the personal and authentic set, and how many of the tracks actually sprung from her struggles with anxiety and depression. Though you shouldn't necessarily expect an album's worth of sad, slow songs. It was important for Tisdale to make an album where she took, as she says, the power away from the word anxiety and depression and have fun with it. You know, celebrate it, she says in the interview you're about to hear. She says, this is what we have and it's okay, and we're going to get through it. And that, quote, the music related to that had to be more upbeat, end quote. So, you know, just because, you know, she's talking about some sort of serious topics, she kind of channeled them in a way where, you know, she was able to sort of channel these emotions and thoughts and feelings into upbeat tracks.
I love the idea of that. It makes all the sense in the world to try to create something that's going to help somebody lift out of these things,
yeah,
as opposed to drag them farther into it with a sad song. So I love that.
And you'll be surprised as you listen to the interview, like sometimes the inspiration for some of the songs comes from, you know, interesting places where you're like, well, why would a song called Vibrations, like, how did that come from sort of anxiety and depression? And you'll be surprised to find out how. So that's also one of our favorite songs.
It is our collective pop shop favorite on the album.
You guys will probably like it too. Go check it out. Anyway, here's our interview with Ashley Tisdale. Hello to Ashley Tisdale, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast.
Hi, thanks.
Thank you so much for coming in. I know you're in the middle of a lot of stuff right now, all in preparation for the release of your album, Symptoms.
Yes.
We're actually recording this interview a little bit before the album actually came out, and you're hearing this in the future, possibly, so there's a lot of timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's your first album in 10 years.
I know.
You're like, I know.
That's crazy.
There's a lot to talk about, but first, why did now seem like the right time for like a big return to music?
You know, it's so funny. I get that question like all the time right now.
Well, I'm sorry. It's not that original. Jeez.
No. It's just, it's funny because it almost seems like I was like, this is the time to do it, but it really was so different than that. Like, it's a very organic thing that happened. I honestly, like, when I went into the studio, I really wasn't even thinking about doing a record. Like, I was like, well, let me see, like, if, you know, I'm happy with the sound and like what we come up with and if I'm inspired. I think for the longest time I just haven't really been inspired in music, you know, for me specifically, like what I would want to come out with. And I just felt like if I were to, you know, do another record, it would have to be something that was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for years I just wasn't really creatively inspired. And so when I got into the studio, my co-writer Rachel West was there, and we met for the first time, and I was telling her really about, like, I sat on the couch and I was in my workout clothes, and she's like, what have you been up to? And I was like, oh girl, I was like, I have had the craziest like journey. I was like, I had this thing happen, and then it like turned into crazy anxiety, and like I had a little bit of depression, and I was like going through everything that
they're like, mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm,
she was just like
down.
Whoa. So so we actually end up writing Symptoms, the song, that first day. And the song is really about commitment issues in a relationship and how, you know, for me, when I first met my husband, I had just been through so much with boyfriends, and I was just like really hard. It was like I had commitment issues, and it was really scary because he was so nice to me and like so great. And like it was so natural that I was like so scared
of
it.
There's got to be something wrong.
There's got to be something wrong. And so that's really what that song was about. And from that moment on, I was like, oh my God. I was like, wait, like, I think I know what this could be. And I never really communicated any of the, you know, things that I personally have been through with anxiety. And so it was really, I think, you know, for the first time, this is, I think my fans who know me are getting to really know me for mm-hmm. who I am and what I've been through. And then people who don't know me, like, will kind of know where I'm coming from. But I just felt like, you know, it's important for me to speak my truth, I guess.
What was the sort of thing that set the whole project in motion? Was it like just you meeting and just sort of talking out your feelings? Or was it when you went, did you have sort of all the songs together before you kind of went into the studio? Or like, no. Were you always thinking, or are you just like, let's just see what happens?
I was just like, let's just see what happens, which was really cool. I'm with a small label, so this is obviously going to be a different, you know, I used to be with a major label. So there's big differences. And
more pressure or less pressure?
Less pressure.
Yeah.
I creatively had the freedom to do whatever I wanted to do. And there wasn't anything that was like, you know, working with this producer because he brings this.
Because they're the super hotness right now.
Yeah, and this is the hot person. It was, honestly, this project is a very, it's like, it's a piece of me. And so, yeah, that was very different to experience. And I think when you, it's not every day that artists get to do that. And I think that that's why I had so much fun doing this, was that I was actually doing like a self-help book at the same time. And so you really see this journey. There was times where I'd like come into the studio and I was like, oh my God, I feel so much pressure in my face because I had been really stressed and had a lot of anxiety. And then that would like honestly inspire the song Under Pressure. And so I was like, we should write a song about being under pressure. And like, just like all of these things, just I had like endless amounts of inspiration. And yeah, I mean, you really see the journey, and you see where the last song is called Feeling So Good. And that was me coming out of depression. And I came into the studio one day and I was like, I mean, I just feel really good. I don't know what to write. And so just like we were talking about, OK, well, you know, like what is that when you feel so good? When like things like open up and the world opens up for you and you kind of get through that rough patch. And so, yeah, I mean, it was just like creatively one of the most like authentic things. And I think, to be honest, out of anything in my career, it is the most authentic thing I've ever done.
You make it sound so easy. You're like, I just feel good. Let's do a song about feeling good. I'm like, I can't do that. This is why, like, you're a professional, like, musician, and I'm not.
Well, there's a lot of people that were so amazing.
You have a little bit of help.
Yeah, around me. So it's just like...
But still, you co-wrote every song on the album, which is something you haven't done before.
No, I mean, yeah. I co-wrote, like... I would say suddenly off my first album, and maybe there was like two songs on my first album, my second album a little bit. I think there's one song that I did with Cara DioGuardi, but not to the extent, yeah, not a co-write the whole album. But, you know, and you just like, I don't know, I just like tapped into everything I was feeling. And even there was moments that, you know, kind of going through what I was going through, that I would have like a kind of a bad day or like a situation where I was like, just feeling shut down, and I would like write in my head lyrics, and I would just write it down in my, like, you know, notes in my
phone. I was gonna say your phone.
And those first couple lyrics are actually the first lyrics of Love Me and Let Me Go, and that's what started that song. So, you know, I think it's just like, I don't know, I've just been writing a lot more. And like I said, I think it's interesting when you finally, like, when I was younger, I wasn't really self-aware, which was great because I played characters that weren't self-aware. And so I think as I became self-aware, I do have a lot of depth to me as a person. And so I think that, you know, that is where I've become a better actor and a better artist, because I've really like dove in and learned a lot about myself.
You know, the whole album, like the sort of the sonics of the album, has a very upbeat vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're talking about something like serious, like anxiety or lost love or like a relationship or the voices in your head or just all that stuff. Was it intentional to kind of keep the music kind of like positive and kind of dreamy while the lyrics may have been a little bit more serious?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think that for me, you know, one of the arguments with my producer was that he was like, there needs to be a slow song. I'm like, no, there doesn't. There doesn't have to
be
a slow song.
What rule is that?
There's no rules. Yeah, I was like... You know, that was the stuff I used to do back in the day where it'd be like, it has to have a ballad, you know, like, and I was like, I don't think it needs to have a ballad. And to be honest, like, I just, you know, a lot of artists do speak of these, you know, things that I'm speaking about. So it's not like it's like crazy unique, but what's unique, I think, to Symptoms and to me is that I really wanted to, you know, yes, this is like the overall subject, and every single song is a literally a symptom that I had, you know, experienced. True Romance is actually, it's my, like, obviously, it's based off of Quentin Tarantino's movie, which is my husband's favorite movie. So that is different, but it's the only song on there that is not a symptom. But I definitely, you know, for me, I was like, I want it. These are the symptoms, but like, let's kind of flip it. Let's like not make it about those symptoms. Like, let's make it relatable and upbeat and not dwell in those feelings, because I feel like the biggest thing for me was just taking the power away from like the word anxiety and depression, and like just kind of like having fun with it and being like, yeah, okay, so I suffer from this sometimes and other people suffer from this, but you know what, let's just like celebrate it and be like, this is what we have and it's okay and we're gonna get through it. And like, I think for me, that's just the music related to that had to be more upbeat.
Have you been hearing like feedback from fans, you know, as they've been hearing like the songs that you've put out in the lead up to the album? Like, what has the feedback been like?
The feedback has been overwhelming. So overwhelming. Yeah, no, it's really, it really has.
I wasn't trying to put words in your mouth.
No, it's like, well, you know, whenever you do any project, you really don't know if it's going to like, I don't know what you're like, don't know what people are going to think about it. And so, you know, just everything, even when From Voices in My Head came out, like there was just such like a huge, just so many people like loving it and telling me their story and telling me that they suffer from that stuff sometimes, and like just really I don't know, just like a strong connection between me and my fans, and like people probably who haven't even heard my music was like, oh my gosh, like I didn't even know you did music, you know? So it was just like, and then they, you know, went on Spotify and like saw that I've done stuff in the past, and so it's been really awesome. I mean, there's times, I think there was a class in Brazil that like wrote the I printed out the lyrics of Voices in My Head and was like doing like a whole like session on self-love and stuff, and I was like, I mean, I saw that and I like cried. So yeah, I mean, wow. It's definitely an emotional thing for me. I would say that I haven't ever been this emotionally like, I don't know, just like impacted. Like I feel even just rehearsing with the band that I rehearsed with a couple days ago, I heard Voices in My Head for the first time with a band and I cried. You know, because you're like your song coming to life, and like, you know, it's just like even seeing people sing my lyrics to me like on Instagram and stuff, and just seeing them sing lyrics that I wrote is like so powerful and just like awesome. So
wow, does it feel like you're like worlds away from the last music back in like 2009? I mean, like, does it feel like the Warner Brothers, your first music is like just another person almost?
Yeah,
like, because it's just been such a huge span of time and you've done so many other things since then. Not to say you're a different person, but it does it feel like you're like, woo, who's that lady back there?
No, for sure. I mean, I felt like obviously when I was at Warner Brothers, I was really young and I was really, you know, it's just like a lot going on in my
how
life.
How young were you back then?
I was like,
because I don't know exactly how old you were in that high school
when I got signed, maybe.
Really? Wow.
I feel like, no, maybe it was like 21. It was definitely like 21, 22. And then, yeah, I mean, I just feel like I remember, obviously, I always wanted to do music. You know, I grew up doing like Les Miserables when I was younger, like on the international national tour. I've always had a music background. But yeah, I think that like when I was signed, I just kind of was like, didn't really know who I was as an artist. Mm. So I was just trying to be like, oh, well, I looked up to Britney Spears. So I was like, that is like, you know, who is inspiring me.
That's the bomb.
I was like, that's who you want to be. So it was just, you know, I kind of had this thing where I was just trying to find myself as an artist. And maybe I wasn't as like confident and maybe a little bit sometimes insecure about it. But yeah, I think doing this project, I really am. Yeah, I found who I am, and I found who I am as an artist, and where, you know, I'm not really trying to fit in with everybody else, but I'm just like, this is who I am. And I'm, you know, really, it feels like two different people, but only just because I feel like I was just so young and right. I was like innocent trying to find myself.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mean, it's always dangerous to sort of say like that era back then. I'm like, no, we're not, no one is dismissing the music in any capacity.
Yeah.
It's more just like, wow, that was like so long ago. And I think when we think of artists and music, you know, if I think of my favorite artists, Madonna, you know, I think of all the music as a very like present in the now. And, you know, whereas Madonna herself might be like, that was 1983.
Yeah.
Like, I was a very different person then. So, and yeah. the artist, will have very different memories of what it was like doing that music, whereas the fans see it through different optics somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that music represented who I was then.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Like, it was all about, like, boys relationships.
Had to get that one ballad on the album.
Yeah, I'd have the one ballad.
Okay, so back to the new album. There's, I think, one of my favorite songs, or probably my favorite song, is probably, like, a song that is very something I can identify with, Vibrations.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Everybody keeps saying that.
I think anyone can relate to it. Mm-hmm. But it's a very specific setup where you're talking about opening up a bottle of wine, warming up some leftover Thai in the microwave, cozying up on the couch, getting drunk with your significant other, yeah. and just, it's just a very different than, like, let's go out and party, put your hands in the air. Yeah. It's just so different. What made you think that, oh, I should write this? Like, was that inspired by, like, we're warming up Thai, this would be a great song?
No, you know, actually, Vibrations was one of the first symptoms that, like, kind of kicked everything into, like, this anxiety ridden like, fear. Mm. I had like this vibrating feeling that obviously anxiety can cause, like, inner, like, anxiousness. And at night when I would go to sleep, I felt like my neck was, like, vibrating. And it wasn't. It was just, like, this feeling of, like, anxiety.
Wow.
And so I was like, so Vibrations is, like, literally kind of like the first symptom. And I was like, came in, I said, you know what, I feel like I just have to write a song about vibrations. And then I was like, yeah, and I really wanted to write something that was, like, really about, like, vibing out.
Mm.
And it was funny because me and Rachel West, who co-wrote that song, she's 25 and single, and I'm, you know, 33 and married. And I was like, I really want to write a song about, like, where me and my husband's life is like right now, and, like, how we do things. But the best part is that even my other younger friends who are single, that's what they do. Like, she's like, I'm single and I'm 25 and this is what I do. So it was like, it is one of the most relatable songs, because, like, right now it's very big to, like, Netflix and chill.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like when we used to, like, back in the day be like, yo, let's go party. You know, like, I feel like this is a super relatable song, no matter if you're married or if you're single, if you're young or if you're older. And so it was one of those things that we were just like, you know, and we would just be like, I was like, what do we do? And I'm like, oh, I love Thai food.
Sure,
so
write
Thai
that
was
down.
In it, and wine, and, like, so yeah, it just kind of is one of those songs that it's a really cool song and everybody keeps saying how much they love it. So
it's such a great play. It's like it's a great twist on the concept, because you're having vibrate, like, something that probably did it hurt when you felt when
it
you,
didn't hurt didn't I just hurt. Was like, I think I'm, well, I know I'm a hypochondriac, so the minute that someone was like that, I was like, something's wrong with me.
Why isn't there a song called Hypochondria?
I know
album?
There should
Ashley.
We should
missed
there's
opportunity.
Like, missed opportunities completely,
so many. It's volume two.
I know. So yeah, I mean, it was just like one of those things that it didn't, like, hurt, it just scared me. And then I think that, like I said, I wanted to, like, just take the power away from stuff that scared me. And, like, even just kind of going through this record and, like, and going through that self-help book, like, I'm not scared of those feelings anymore. I'm not, like, you know, I think that, you know, one of the first things that we did when we did the photo shoot for the single Voices in My Head, obviously everybody has, like, a good side and a bad side, and the photographer was like, okay, cool, like, look this way. And I was like, oh man, that's my bad side. And I was, like, sitting there, and as I was, like, saying that to myself, I was like, you know what, like, I'm about to, like, kind of show the world, like, not a great side of me. You know, this album is not really about a great side of me. It's about stuff that I, you know, suffer from and deal with. And then when I looked at the picture, which ultimately became this single cover for Voices in My Head, I was like, oh my God, it's, like, really beautiful. I love this. Like, I think this is a beautiful side of me. And that's kind of where I've landed, where it's like, yeah, I might have these issues, but I think that that's what makes me beautiful, because it's not being perfect is what makes you beautiful. It's all of these things about you and about yourself. So.
Which you should just have your own podcast and just, like, like, dole out, like advice to people.
You're hilarious.
You're like, I'm like, I don't know if I have a bad side or a good side. I think all my sides are kind of mediocre. But Ashley is suggesting that maybe I should just put myself out there and I can do it too. If she says I can do it, I can.
You can.
Okay. I could keep you here forever, but I still have more questions. So,
yeah.
Though you probably have to leave, you're going to be trapped here for a little bit longer. Correct me if I'm wrong. It looks like, and I think I've done my research, I don't think you've done a headlining tour of your own.
Mm-mm, okay. No.
I mean, you toured with High School Musical, but that doesn't really count as your own proper tour. and you've done some radio shows. Are you planning on doing any sort of solo shows, even just like small intimate things around the record launch? What can we say about seeing you live?
I can't around the record launch because I actually am jumping into the Netflix series that I'm doing for the next couple months. So I'm hoping that...
Busy lady.
I know. I'm hoping that after that, I'm able to do some shows. I mean, okay. My dreams have always been to like definitely go on tour and support my records. I think it's just like finding obviously the right partner and like doing that. And I think that that's definitely something I want to do for sure.
By the time people hear this, you'll have performed on TV on James Corden.
Yeah.
When was the last time you sang on TV, like a live?
Don't make me nervous.
No, yeah. I mean, by the time they hear this, it'll all have been happened. Yes. But I mean, has
a long time.
A long time?
Like, I would say 10 years. 10 years.
Does it feel like you're stepping into like a different sort of like costume of Ashley, or is it just, I mean, because it's like, you know, you've had this incredible career in the past 10 years that has sort of been kind of away from music, even though you've done music, like you've done covers and stuff, and you have had music activities, but you've done so many other things in the interim. Does it feel like, okay, I'm gonna go over here and sort of do this and be this Ashley for a little bit? Does it feel like you're getting back into the groove, or does it all feel like, no, it's very natural, it's all me?
It's very natural. I think it's more just like it's just me. I think that, you know, what I love about music right now, and especially because I've been recording even stuff after, you know, Symptoms. So
the second album is on the way.
Future. So what's so great about it is that I'm, you know, for me, I'm like the fact that I'm inspired and the fact that I get to tell my story. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about music, is that it's purely me. It's not me trying to be something else. It's literally just me. And, you know, because acting, I'm obviously playing a character, and producing something, I'm producing someone else's vision. But like, this is who I am. And so mm-hmm. that's kind of where I've found myself with music. But yeah, I mean, I actually have been playing acoustic shows. So I got a little bit of like the nervousness out of it, which is actually interesting because I never did acoustic stuff, like performances back in the day. Like I only did, like the minute that I was assigned to Warner, you know, I was like in concert and for 15,000 people a sure. night. And you're just like thrown into this world, and you're like, oh my god, you have dancers and you're doing choreography, and it's like this whole craziness that I actually never had those like intimate shows. And so I've been doing that with Scott, who is the engineer on this project and also a producer, and so he's been my guitarist. And it's like so scary because you're like, this is acoustic and it's so intimate, it's scary, but it really has helped me because it's like, I don't know, I just now I'm not as nervous for, you know, a bigger production, I guess, of right. music. So I'd love to do something like both.
Let's
if I were to go on tour.
Acoustic shows. How hard could it be to pull those together? Simple.
I mean, I think it's so simple.
Let's
and it's so easy. The music
Hotel
definitely
Cafe.
Does sound a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm just like trying to be your booking agent right now. I'm like, can you do rearrangements of your old songs?
Yes, like, acoustically.
All the dance pop hits from like 2006, 8, 7, 9.
It was really funny because someone asked us to do Love Me and Let Me Go. Which is like, I mean, I don't know if you've heard that one, but that is like very much about the music element to it. It's a very electro. So we were like, how are we going to do this?
Beatbox it somehow?
Yes.
Sure.
But you know what? I think a song that I think great music can be played either way.
Yes.
And so sometimes when you slow down a song, you're like, wow, it's like, this is really beautiful. I remember I did, I had a thing on my YouTube called Music Sessions, and my husband would do cover songs with me. And
I was watching X's and O's the other day.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And so one of the songs he did was Stay, you know, by Alessia Cara and Zedd. And I had never heard that slowed down, and I got emotional singing it because I was like, oh my gosh, like, it's such a beautiful song when you slow it down. It's a great song no matter what. But mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, when you slow it down, like, it really is such a powerful, like, I don't know. It's just, like, so emotional. And I was like, so I think that, yeah, you find it, I think great songs can be played both ways.
So you said you're shooting your Netflix show. So we may not see you on the road soon. Is there any other music plans that we can tease for the future that you're allowed to talk about, or is everything top secret right now?
I mean, nothing's top secret. I think that I'm just continuing to record and write music and staying inspired and know that this is not just going to be this right. record. So I think that, you know, that's important.
So we're getting 3 albums this year.
You know, like nowadays, you can do whatever, I think.
Yes. Yeah. You know? No, I mean, it is weird. Like, and this, I mean, I had a million more questions that I didn't get to ask, but that's fine. But one of them was kind of jumping off from what you just said about how things have, like, things are so different now.
Yeah.
Like, compared to when you started, sort of, you know, with high school, in terms of what sort of the mass audience has got to know you from High School Musical and your albums with Warner, though you had obviously done stuff professionally before that, things have changed so much. Like,
yeah.
There wasn't Instagram. Like, you know, YouTube was around, but it's not the way it was now. Like, I mean, I don't know. Do you have a TikTok account, Ashley? Like,
no, I don't have a TikTok account.
Get it with it.
I know, I really do.
I think it's like a kid thing, but I'm sorry if you have a TikTok account, people. But it's like things have changed so much.
Yeah.
But I think it's brilliant, like what you've done in the interim. Like, you have really stayed connected with people, like with your original fans, and expanded your fan base, and really kind of like had this very well-rounded kind of thing going on where people have really gotten to know you in so many different ways. And now you're kind of channeling all that through music in just a different capacity. So
no, for sure.
You're doing great, Ashley.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh my God, thank you.
And good luck with everything in the future.
Thank you so much. We're just vibing.
Thank you so much to Ashley for your time. I'm sorry I couldn't sit down with you guys too. I was like really sad about this one, but Keith obviously did a great job.
Well, I also had help. Some of those questions came from Katie too.
Yes,
so like, she was there in spirit.
I was like, "Can Keith, do you feel comfortable using the word adulting in a question?" I'm not sure if you ended up using it.
I don't know
it.
If I did either. Well, I guess we'll know now.
Vibrations is kind of about adulting. It's a song about adulting.
I think it's probably my favorite track on the album.
Agreed.
All right. Now, it's time for our chart stat of the week. Don't know why I'm surviving every long. 41 years ago, almost this week, Yvonne Elliman's If I Can't Have You, not to be confused with the same name Shawn Mendes song, hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. The single, which was written by the Bee Gees for the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, jumped 2-1 on the Hot 100 dated May 13th, 1978.
It's like Sean timed it with this anniversary or something.
It's like he planned this.
Because I'm sure Sean is a huge Saturday Night Fever soundtrack fan. Like, he was not even an idea of a person at that point.
Were his parents even alive at that point?
Yeah, I don't. Who, maybe not.
Oh, jeez. Well, If I Can't Have You was the fourth number one Hot 100 hit from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, following 3 chart toppers by the Bee Gees: Night Fever, Stayin' Alive, and How Deep Is Your Love. Notably, Elliman had previously been heard on a number one hit before If I Can't Have You. She was a backing vocalist on Eric Clapton's cover of Bob Marley's I Shot the Sheriff, which hit number one in 1974.
That is fun trivia.
Yeah.
That's really good trivia.
Fun trivia. So there you have it. Almost 41 years ago this week, Yvonne Elliman's If I Can't Have You hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. If I can't have you.
Okay, I've got a great idea for a playlist for Billboard's Spotify account. It's a playlist of all songs that have the same title as the Saturday Night Fever songs. Like, actually, you could do both songs, because How Deep Is Your Love makes me think of
Drew
Calvin
Hill.
Harris.
Oh, Drew Hill also had How Deep Is Your Love.
Okay, Calvin Harris had one 2 or 3 years ago. But I'm wondering if you could come up with some other ones. I mean, like, Wyclef's Stayin' Alive doesn't count, because it's actually like an interpolation of Stayin' Alive.
I don't know if there's another Night Fever. That's really
gotta
iconic.
Gotta be a Night Fever.
Stayin' Alive.
There's just gotta be.
It's funny, like, when Calvin's How Deep Is Your Love came out, I immediately thought of Drew Hill's version. Mm. How deep is your love for me? Tell me what it's gonna be. I think that's how it goes. I totally is terribly wrong. Okay, so what song should we... Let's think of that playlist.
Okay.
Everyone at home, think of your favorite non-Bee Gees version of Night Fever, which is not a cover of Night Fever. Yeah, sure, that'll be easy.
And please tweet us.
Yeah, tweet us.
Because we're going to need help with this one.
Hashtag Night Fever, same title, not a cover.
Oh, that's a great hashtag.
Soups.
Takes up half your Twitter word count.
Perfect. What song should we go out on?
How Deep Is Your Love by Calvin Harris.
Featuring Rihanna?
No.
No?
No.
It's not featuring Rihanna?
No, it's not.
It's not?
No.
What was the one with
Rihanna? You're thinking of Love? Or
the one that Taylor Swift wrote.
Oh, This Is What You Came For?
Oh, shoot.
It's actually featuring Disciples. That's the female voice in How Deep Is Your Love.
I'm so sorry, Disciples. So sorry.
I would love to hear Calvin Harris featuring Disciples, How Deep Is Your Love, to go out.
Okay, see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye. How deep is your love?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.